Good morning, happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to The Bridge, Coast Community Radio's own weekly news magazine. I'm Kate Brister. It's a Thanksgiving celebration this morning. Our guests include students and teachers from Salmonberry Hill School right here in Astoria, young listeners from the Lone Star State, observations and advice from an uncle in Roseburg. Every Thanksgiving table should have one. And in the second half, Lady Liberty reminds us what America means to the world, and we'll hear some of the history of how she came to be America's spiritual icon.
Happy Thanksgiving!
This morning, on the Bridge. We begin first with First Voices and a revisit to a sacred space here in the Northwest. In 2015, correspondent Anna King produced the acclaimed series The Daughters of Hanford, highlighting the underrepresented women's perspectives of the nuclear site in 12 radio pieces. The Hanford Nuclear Reservation is a mammoth 586-square-mile chunk of desert earth in southeast Washington state. It became a secret site for refining the plutonium needed for nuclear weapons during World War II. Native American tribes and settlers were evicted off their traditional riverside villages and ripening farms to make way for the secret government mission. Workers turned cutting-edge science into factory production, churning out plutonium buttons right through the Cold War. After refining 2/3 of all the United States weaponized plutonium, Hanford is a boneyard of some of the Earth's nastiest chemicals and radioactive waste. Much of the cleanup is on a scale that twists the mind, like the more than $12 billion waste treatment plant being built now amid the sand and sagebrush. Natalie Swan is part of the Yakima Nation and one of the Daughters of Hanford. Anna King has her story.
Natalie Swan is perhaps the shyest person I've ever interviewed.
I'm making it harder than it is.
It is, yeah.
We sat on the west bank of the Yakima River in the Yakima Greenway. Downstream from here, Hanford is changing. Cleanup is happening. But Swan is also changing because of the Southeast Washington nuclear site.
I'm a quiet person, but I'm getting a little bit louder.
Swan has an important job for the Yakima Nation. She helps negotiate long-term Hanford cleanup on behalf of the Yakima tribes and their federal treaty of 1855. She never expected to speak for her own Yakima Nation and the plants, animals, and landscape they care about. Now she's a representative of the Hanford Natural Resources Trustee Council. She and the group decide how to account for what happened to the environment during World War II and the Cold War. Swan has a 4-year biology degree, and one main reason for doing this work is her lifelong love of the region's plants.
So I think one of my favorite plants is a little wild strawberry that grows in higher elevations, and it just tasted so delicious as a kid.
As that kid, she took careful note of traditional food and medicine plants and those sweet, wild strawberries.
And every time I taste them now, they just bring me back to that moment.
The moment she tasted one for the first time. To protect the outdoors at Hanford, Swan sits in a lot of conference rooms. This is what a lot of the real work at Hanford looks like, long meetings. The board is made up of representatives from the state, federal, and tribal governments. And those different viewpoints often don't agree.
Because there's so many different, maybe sovereigns or agencies, there would be differences. And to that, I would just say that Yakima Nation's fearless in protecting resources.
By that, she means the tribes are flanked by lawyers to ensure their 1855 treaty rights to hunt, gather, and fish from millions of acres of Washington state lands are protected. Some think Hanford's landscape looks barren, but Swan says this special place and its plants, animals, and fish will always hold great value for the Yakima people. Hanford is part of their traditional range. After several tries to explain, Swan braces herself, speaks up.
So it's not a wasteland.
Swan cares so much about Hanford and these meetings, sometimes she even grinds her teeth. Hanford's
like a giant, enormous food web. That's why it's important to me.
Her son, Jonathan, is an everyday reminder of what she's working for. Long hair and a quick smile. He's just two now. Swan wants a clean environment for Jonathan and his children and their children. She wants her culture to survive past him. And that's tied to a huge swath of this landscape. Now some of it's called Hanford.
And to just continue to be able to share teachings that were shared with myself growing up as a kid, related to the land.
Swan's never forgotten those wild strawberries. She stitches their sweet shape and memory into her traditional beadwork. For the plants and people she loves, she's getting a little louder. I'm Anna King on the banks of the Yakima River.
Thanksgiving opens the holiday season, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, and of course New Year. No matter where you are in the country or what cultural celebrations you enjoy, one common message is thinking of those less fortunate than ourselves. We have the story now of Chuck Collins. He first caught attention in 1985 when he gave an inheritance of $500,000 to several foundations at the age of 26. Collins is a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a former One Percenter. But now he's dedicated his life to fighting wealth inequality in the United States. In his new book, Born on Third Base, Collins tells his story of being born into a wealthy family and eventually giving away his inheritance. He argues income inequality is corrosive for our society because it undermines our economy and democracy. He says there's common ground between the rich and poor who are fighting for solutions.
It's understandable that people feel angry about how very wealthy people, a segment of wealthy people, have rigged the rules and created these inequalities. But there are actually a lot of potential allies there. The 1% is not monolithic.
Collins says voters in cities and states across the country passed measures to help close the income gap, including minimum wage initiatives in four states. He says there are other creative solutions, such as a proposal in Portland to add a surcharge to companies with extreme gaps between CEO and median worker pay. Collins says inequality was a driver this presidential election as well. Collins says candidates such as Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump represented populist resentments for the lack of a level playing field economically.
In a way, I think this is the inequality election.
You're listening to The Bridge. We're happy to be sharing this morning with you and your family. If you have children in your home today, you might want to call them to the radio right now. Debbie Twombly is a teacher, a traveler, and a volunteer programmer here at Coast Community Radio. Debbie programs a variety of music shows through the week, is heard on Bedtime Stories, and is the host of Skidamarink and Troll Radio Review. Recently, she went to Salmonberry Hill School to talk to students there, ages 3 to 11. They have some thoughts about the day and a song. We also have Thanksgiving wishes all the way down from the great state of Texas from young listeners Ariana and Elena. And yes, they are my granddaughters.
I'm Zoe and I'm 3 years old. What are you thankful for, Zoe?
A cat.
Cats are nice.
I'm Jaden, and I'm 5 years old, and I'm thankful for the whole land.
Nice.
I'm Annabelle, and I'm thanking you for all the people in the world.
Hi, my name is Elena. I'm 7 years old from Austin, Texas, and I'm thankful for Santa.
Hi, my name is Ariana. I'm 8 years old from Austin, Texas, and I'm thankful for the love of Jesus in my heart. And now a poem by Joanna Fuchs.
Thanksgiving Delights.
On Thanksgiving Day, we're thankful for our blessings all year through. For family we dearly love, for good friends old and new.
For sun to light and warm our days, for stars that glow at night. For trees of green and skies of blue and puffy clouds of white.
We're grateful for our eyes that see the beauty all around, for arms to hug and legs to walk and ears to hear each sound.
The list of all we're grateful for would fill a great big book. Our thankful hearts find new delights everywhere we look.
Happy Thanksgiving!
What would a Thanksgiving Day be without stories and advice from older relatives? It's a great time to share where the family has been and where it's going. A lot of families today are sharing stories about ancestors in the old country, wherever on earth that is. Richard Packham is a listener from Roseburg, Oregon. His columns, A View from the Hill, for the News Review in Roseburg, were published alternate Sundays from 2005 through 2015. We'll hear an excerpt from two of those articles, Thinking About Family and Dinner Conversation, read for us this morning by Graham Nystrom.
Finding out about one's ancestors and their stories has become a major hobby for many people nowadays. With the internet, thousands of people have become amateur genealogists. Genealogical information can come from many sources: official government records of births, deaths, marriages, wills, immigration, censuses, church records of baptisms, marriages, burials, family records such as family Bibles, local histories of a town or county, genealogical collections, biographies and autobiographies, and interviews with older family members. Some genealogical information is quite accurate, but not everyone who compiles it, especially if not well-trained, is equally careful with the data, and mistakes are frequent. Why should one care about one's ancestors? After all, they are all dead, and except perhaps for grandparents, and maybe also some great-grandparents, you have never even heard of them. Many people feel, why bother? What good is it? Certainly one is justified in feeling that way. On the other hand, those grandparents and great-grandparents were part of a family. They, too, had parents and grandparents who raised them and influenced them, taught them about life, and gave them a heritage. However many generations back an ancestor may be, we are descended from that ancestor. We carry the genes, the blood, as it used to be called, of that person in our bodies, and perhaps also something more. Tracing all of one's ancestors can quickly become a daunting task, since the number of ancestors in any generation doubles for each generation further back. One has two parents, but four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, and 16 great-great-grandparents. When you get to the eighth generation back, you will have 256 ancestors in that generation, 2 to the eighth power. The ninth generation has 512 of your ancestors, the tenth, 1,024 ancestors, and so on. In each generation, half of the ancestors will be women who had a different family name, which, ideally, should also be traced. Since a new generation appears approximately every 30 years, 10 generations would take you about 300 years back. Many people have been able to find their ancestors of 300 years ago. A family reunion of your fifth cousins would probably fill a football stadium and overflow. Anyone who lived just 15 generations back, around the 16th century, could be an ancestor of over 30 billion people today. Royal genealogies, especially very ancient ones, are sometimes fictitious, based on legend rather than fact, produced for propaganda purposes. The genealogies in the Bible are typical. But they are still interesting. Through her Scandinavian ancestry, I was able to trace my wife's genealogy to Norwegian royalty, who traced their ancestry to Odin, king of the Norse gods. It was probably a mistake to tell her that she was descended from a god. Caution, starting to research your ancestors can become addictive. But wouldn't you like to know who your royal ancestors were? I'm sure you have some. But at this holiday time, please obey the unwritten rule for genealogists. Don't talk about your ancestors. Nobody who is not a relative is interested. Your family, on the other hand, is the perfect audience. Ancestor talk ranks with showing pictures of grandchildren, telling cute stories about your cat, or lengthy descriptions of your last operation. This is A View from the Hill.
It's Thanksgiving morning on the bridge. We go now to New York to visit the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty was originally intended as a monument to the principles of international republicanism, but it was the poem by Emma Lazarus, The New Colossus, that gave the mighty statue a voice and the role of welcoming mother to arriving world-weary immigrants. It was quoted in John F. Kennedy's book, A Nation of Immigrants, in 1958, as well as a 2010 political speech by President Obama advocating immigration policy reform. The original manuscript is held by the American Jewish Historical Society. It's my pleasure to read it for you now. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beaconed hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient land, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
plains I stand and cast a wishful eye to Canaan's fair and happy land, where my possessions lie. Transporting grass and scene that rises to my sight, sweet fields arrayed in living green and rivers of delight. I am bound for the promised land, I'm bound for the promised land. Oh, who will come and go with me? I am bound for the promised land.
Oceans, fruits that never fail, on trees immortal grow. There rocks and hills and brooks and vales with milk and honey flow.
I am bound for the promised land, I'm bound for the promised land. Oh, who will come and go with me? I am bound for the promised land. O'er those wide extended plains shines one eternal day. There God the sun forever reigns and scatters night away.
I'm bound for the promised land, I'm bound for the promised land. Oh, who will come and go with me? I'm bound for the promised land.
I'm bound for the promised land.
Though Jordan's waves around me roll, fearless I launch away.